We stream online at cgsf.ca. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, and listen to podcasts of our programs on SoundCloud and our website. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CGSF or 2573. This is Khwaeng Shekhlech from the Intlaqemuk Territories up in the Nicola Valley from Gwaishkina, BC. And I'm your host here on Free Voices, brought to you by Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. And we have an awesome show coming up for you guys. Our subject is on acceptance of grief. And also we have some great music coming up. We have Iced Earth. We have the Black Angels. We have Robert Miles, Tina Go, and the Hallucination. And we have our guests, regular co-hosts coming up. We have Wegedes coming. We have a special requested replay of Dr. Akfan's interview. I had been asked by Lady Faima that we should play it again. So, yes, we'll do that. And also, we have Shkwait Shekhlech and Lady Faima coming in, and also Celia. So stay tuned. We're going to get this show started. Get ready to rock and roll. This is Iced Earth Anthem. Enjoy, everyone. Welcome for the coming.
Mother, she is strained and she suffers. She saves all.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, we're back, and thank you for joining us all. We have our brother on the line, Wegedesk. So thank you for joining us. How are you doing, Wegedesk?
I'm doing awesome, bro. Thank you so much for having me on the air again. Thanks to all the listeners and the staff there. I hope everybody's enjoying the sunshine and the deep breath.
Oh, yes, beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us. And would you please lead us through our breaths today?
Absolutely, bro. Yeah, let's get ready for three really good deep breaths, guys. This is so good for our body. And our body just loves us so much. It's good for us to give it all the oxygen that it can get. So let's relax our belly and our shoulders and our jaw and really breathe in nice and deep in 3, 2, 1. All the way in. Fill those lungs up huge. And let it all go. Nice. Let's do 2 more of those. All the way in. Fill those lungs up huge. And letting it go. And on this last one, I want you to breathe in extra and then do a second breath in at the top and then a nice sigh on the way out. Yeah, that is good.
Woo. So good, bro. Wow, man. That was awesome, yeah. Man. So great to feel that oxygen hit us.
Yeah, our bodies deserve it, no doubt about that.
Yeah, for sure, especially on a beautiful day like this. The sun's shining, it's not too hot, it's not too cold. Just a beautiful June 1st. And yeah, we have a subject today, and it's on acceptance of grief. And would really love to hear what you have to say about that.
Absolutely, Chief. Acceptance of grief. That's such a powerful subject because anything to do with grief is going to be sensitive. And, so acceptance of it is certainly a way that can maybe make it more manageable for us in our process of transforming grief into a virtue potentially or a benefit of some kind. And I really do believe that every experience that we have is given to us for our benefit. And, you know, that's where our faith is tested, because some experiences is like so brutal. As we all know, everybody goes through absolutely horrendous stuff. And the question for me that I asked was, how was this a benefit for me? And, you know, ask and you shall receive, and the knowledge came to me, and I'm so grateful for the things that caused me grief at one point in my life. And I think acceptance of the grief is a real powerful step towards that ultimate healing goal, where you look back at your whole life and you're so grateful for everything. Right? I think that's a big process of empowerment, self-empowerment, which is what Eagle Nation Radio is all about.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah, for me, you know, I just realized in the last couple of weeks that I was going through some grief, but I wasn't fully aware of it, but my body sure was. And it let me know big time that, you know, you got to take care of this and be aware of it and accept it, and you're able to deal with it. And for me, that's what happened. I was like suffering from just from my eyes, and that has to do, I learned this from Counselor Fari, when your eyes are suffering, sometimes it means you're going through some grief that just might be too overpowering, and so you got to address it and speak about it. And it does help to talk about these issues. You know, sometimes it's hard to talk about it because, you know, we all don't want to seem weak. We don't want to seem like we're can't handle life on our own. But, you know, sometimes we just got to step out of our comfort zone, ask for some help, or just for talking. And that's the way it goes. So I really appreciate you to come and join us live and bring us through our breaths again and give us some of your wisdom. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Always great to brush up on these very important and healthy subjects. Thank you for your time and energy manning the station at Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. You know, you're really keeping us going strong. So thank you, bro.
All right. Appreciation
to you and everybody else. Bye for now.
Okay, thank you. Lots of love to you, and you have a great week and weekend. And we'll talk to you later. Bye for now. All right, so we're going to carry on with the show, and we're going to get to the interview of Dr. Akvan, but first we're going to play a song from the Black Angels, and The Prodigal Son is the name of the song, and enjoy, and we'll be right with you. right, we're back. That was The Black Angels, The Prodigal Son, directed by Caleb Busacker. Yeah, so we have the interview of Dr. Akvant, so lots of thanks to him for giving us that time. So without further ado, here we go.
First of all, I want to thank you and appreciate you for joining us here at CGSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. And we have our program here at Free Voices, and our main goal is to bring positivity and empowerment to our listener out there, and just bring them some good success, successful people and achievers, world achievers in this world, and bring that, their interviews of them, or just their talk of what made them so successful. And yeah, so we'd like to ask you, Dr. Akvant, what are your thoughts on international law, and what brought you into international law and human rights?
Thank you very much for this kind invitation. It's an honor to speak to the SFU campus community on this important topic. You know, when we think about international law, we have an image of universal values, human rights, world peace, but above all, a world which is regulated by law rather than violence, a world where might does not make right. So international law has been a long time in the making. If we look at our historical past, we see appalling cruelty and violence, wars, colonization, genocide, and a whole host of other evils. And we see that international law was born in the context of this violence. The first modern peace conference, which was held at The Hague in 1899, came at the conclusion of the devastating Napoleonic Wars. The League of Nations was created at the end of the First World War, which was supposed to be a war that would put an end to all other wars. And then the United Nations Charter, the Nuremberg Tribunal, the UN the Universal Declaration on Human Rights in 1948, and all of these were born of the horrific excesses of the unprecedented radical evil of the Holocaust and what have you. So there is a dialectic relationship, in fact, between extreme violence and the ambitions that we have for a rule-oriented international order where states all comply with international law. So in that sense, one who is more on the idealistic side of life would naturally be attracted to international law, whether as an academic discipline or as an area of practice. But as is often the case, once you actually become engaged with the real world outside of the academic bubble, then you begin to see the complexities, the difficulties, the challenge of moving from where we are today to the ideal image that we have of that future where these universal values are not simply espoused as distant ideals, but are actually implemented in practice.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, pretty awesome. And in your work that you're doing now, are you fairly happy and pleased with what you're doing?
It's a very good question. The answer is a definite yes and no. In a sense, I'm very happy in this, that I chose a career in human rights. I began my career out of law school as a young United Nations prosecutor with the newly established International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia and The Hague. We have to remember that when I graduated in 1990, this was the end of the Cold War, and the Berlin Wall had collapsed. The Soviet Union dissolved literally overnight in 1991. So there was this great promise of a world that would be overtaken by a liberal democracy. Francis Fukuyama wrote about the end of history. So it was in that window of opportunity that the members of the UN Security Council, including the United States and Russia and France and the UK and China, had the political will to establish the first ever UN War Crimes Tribunal, the first such body since Nuremberg in 1945. So I happened to be in the right place at the right time, or depending on how you look at a career dealing with ethnic cleansing and genocide and all these horrible things, maybe I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. So I ended up playing a very significant role in building this historic institution and bringing back to life the long dormant promise of Nuremberg, that after prosecuting the Nazis, we would move to a universal system of justice and not just this ad hoc court that was intended only to prosecute the Nazi leaders. Because throughout the Cold War era, from 1945 to the 1990s, we had Pol Pot in Cambodia, Mengistu in Ethiopia, Idi Amin in Uganda, and all these mass murderers committing these atrocities with impunity. So this was the beginning of the end of a culture of impunity. And as I became entangled more and more in this enterprise, I went from Yugoslavia to Rwanda following the 1994 genocide there. I worked with the UN in Guatemala, where I dealt with the genocide against the Mayan indigenous people, in Cambodia, where I looked at the crimes of the Khmer Rouge. I would go to northern Iraq during the genocide against the Yazidi Kurdish population by ISIS, the genocide of the Rohingya by me, recently was with the survivors in the refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh. So getting back to your question, am I happy about what I do? Well, part of me is very pleased that at least I'm trying, perhaps in this world of indifference where people simply don't care about the suffering of others. We have a very narcissistic, materialistic, greedy culture. So I feel that it's my duty as a human being not to turn my back on those who suffer, to have empathy, to have a conscience, and to do what I can with my skill set, which happens to be in international law, to bring some measure of justice to these poor, voiceless people. But part of me also feels a sense of futility, because when you look at the injustice, at some point you feel that nothing that you do is enough. Nothing that you do can possibly undo the terrible things that these people have experienced. So when people think about human rights work as being, glamorous, I always tell them there's anything but glamorous. You very strong resolve and constitution to spend more than 30 years of your life, as I have, dealing with the survivors deeply traumatized of these atrocities, not becoming cynical, not becoming burnt out, not suffering too much from, PTSD, which today has become a very fashionable term. But in my days, when I was thrown in the middle of the war in former Yugoslavia by the UN, no one had any idea about the psychological consequences. of being subjected to these sort of crimes. So in that sense, getting back to your question, part of me is very pleased that I've done this. Part of me is, you know, quite exhausted, which is why whenever I have an opportunity to speak to students, the next generation of leaders, including on your wonderful radio program, I like to tell people that the thing that gives me the greatest reassurance is to know that there will be a new generation of people that will take up the mantle and go out there and fight for justice. Because there is a feeling very often of loneliness, that most people just don't care. And I want to just add here that caring is not about virtue, not about ideological posturing and finger pointing and this culture that we have created of demonizing this or that person and pointing the finger so that we feel good about ourselves. There is a very big distance with activism and paying, you know, lip service to all these platitudes, as opposed to really rolling up your sleeves and listening to the voice of people who suffer. And it doesn't matter whether it's a refugee camp halfway across the world or some injustice that happens halfway down the street from the SFU campus or wherever you happen to be on this planet. There are always people who suffer. There is always injustice, and therefore both a responsibility and an opportunity for us to make that basic decision. Do I care or not? It's as simple as that. If we care, then we begin to ask questions. We come out of our little bubble of privilege, our cultural comfort zone, and instead of just finger pointing and virtue signaling, we really look at what actually helps people who are in distress, who are downtrodden, what actually helps them, rather than what makes us look good and progressive. So I'm sorry for that very long answer, but that is why I have such, you know, mixed feelings about what I do.
Well, that was a very beautiful explanation. I really enjoyed it. I'm sure our listener out there is really enjoying and being inspired by your words of wisdom, your compassion. It's just an honor, a blessing to have you come to our show and spend some time with us. And I really hope that we're able to continue and bring some more of the knowledge that you have, the wonderful words that you can spread to make this world a better, positive place. And I just, again, I want to commend you with all your work that you've done all over the world and here also in Canada. Just huge blessings to you. And yeah, looking forward to speaking more with you.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words. And I hope in the coming years to hear about the great accomplishments and services to humanity of the student community at SFU, the generation that are now in school and about to graduate. And I also hope to have the pleasure to come one day to your campus and to meet all of you in person. So thank you very much.
Yes, that would be a big honor for us. And yes, we'll have to say bye for now. Lots of love to you, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for your kind words.